scientism is not science. It's a dangerous and self-refuting philosophy that fixates on means but ignores wisdom.
Dr. Angus Manoogian of the Evangelical Philosophical Society talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And it leads to the abolition of man, as man is reduced to a material object. It's used as a weapon by atheists and skeptics to attack religion as a source of knowledge. It begins with Bacon's dictum, knowledge is power, but it overlooks the way in which power corrupts.
You can meet and hear Dr. Angus Manoogian making the case against scientism at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th, 15 miles east of St. Louis in Collinsville, Illinois. You'll find a list of speakers, topics, and registration information at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Well, it's news, of course, that recently Ireland voted to overturn a constitutional amendment that up to that point had made it unique in the European Union, a constitutional amendment that protected the life of the unborn. They overturned it, and now they have legalized abortion. That's the big picture. What did we learn when the voters left the polling place and were answering questions of other pollers who were asking them about their habits, their practices? What kind of voters showed up, and how did they vote, and why did they vote that way? And what else in their lives help us understand what happened in Ireland? Joining us to talk about exit polling on Ireland's abortion vote, Dr. Michael New, visiting associate professor of economics at Ave Maria University, associate scholar at the Charlotte Logier Institute, and author of a recent column for National Review Online titled "An Irish Exit Poll Finds Nuanced Views About Legal Abortion." Dr. New, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So what kind of facts emerged from the exit polling that help us, what probably single one helps us best understand what happened in Ireland?
Yeah, just some background. The Irish Broadcasting Network, RTE, did a very thorough exit poll during the day that Irish citizens are voting on Amendment 8, and they surveyed over 3,000 people and did more than just ask what they voted for. They really tried to get into the reasons about why people voted the way they did. And we're able to kind of see what was kind of most salient in the minds of many Irish voters. And what Irish voters reported as to why they voted the way they did was that unique or hard case pregnancies really kind of played a big role in their decision. That when they asked them what motivated them, I think three of the top four answers were pregnancies in the case of rape, pregnancies that pose a serious health risk to the mother, or pregnancies that involve pretty severe fetal deformity. So it seems that what Irish voters are doing is really saying they thought abortion should be a legal option in these kind of unique hard cases. It's really a lot less clear that they were really voting to make abortion legal on demand.
Now, the press seems to be spinning this both in Europe and here, especially here in the United States, that this was a all-out vote for abortion on demand without restrictions.
Right. It's not really clear that that's the case. I mean, the margin of victory was large. The Irish citizens voted to repeal. I think the percentage was about 67%. The margin was a lot larger than I think both sides expected. But again, if you have to kind of look at why people voted the way they did, again, when you show up and vote, you have two options, either repeal or not. And what this exit poll does is it really gives people a chance to explain what they think. And the most interesting question in the exit poll was, should abortion be legal for any reason 12 weeks into pregnancy? And that was split very evenly. I think only 52% said yes. As this exit poll, I think I've overestimated the number of people who said yes. Probably less than half of Irish citizens or Irish voters support that position. So I think there is a lot of room to enact some good protective laws for unborn children in Ireland. Again, the result was certainly a setback. It was a disappointment. But it's not really clear at all that Irish voters want abortion on demand.
How did it break down in terms of a gender gap, if any?
There was a bit of a gender gap, but not a huge one. It looked like women were about 6 to 7 percentage points more likely than men to favor repeal. And that's pretty consistent with polls that we see in the U.S., that one of the biggest myths of kind of abortion polling is there's a big gender gap on this issue. And there's really not. You know, women tend to be a bit more religious. Women tend to go to church more often. I think that steers them toward a more pro-life perspective. In the U.S., sometimes we do find a gap, but it's usually only a few percentage points. It's not not substantial.
Is there any apparent correlation with involvement in church services or attendance at worship services?
Absolutely. The best one, well, not the best, but one of the best predictors of how people think about the abortion issue, both in the U.S. and also very likely in Ireland, is how often they attend church. And what this exit poll did that was a good question is asked about frequency of church attendance. And amongst Irish voters who reported that they attend church weekly or more than weekly, I think over 60%, probably around 65%, voted against repeal, that these people who attend church weekly or more than weekly were very pro-life in their voting. The problem is that's only about 30% of the Irish population. Sadly, over the years, Ireland's become a lot more secular. Church attendance has fallen. And amongst that 70% who attend church less often than weekly, repeal won by over 80%. So we did very well amongst people who go to church. The problem is the church-going population of Ireland is sadly shrinking.
One of the things that came out, I think probably just as the vote was finally being tallied, was the president of Ireland, if I'm not mistaken, characterized this vote as a rebuke to the Roman Catholic Church. Was that in any evidence in the exit polling?
It's hard to say. You know, again, we do see the big split amongst kind of church-going Irish voters and those who attend church less often. I will say that, you know, Ireland tragically did have a scandal where there were priests accused of or found guilty of molesting children. And I think that as a result of that, you know, they don't necessarily have quite the stature maybe they at one point did. They perhaps don't have the moral authority they at one point did. I'm not sure it was a rebuke to the church, but I think it is a fair statement that some Irish voters view the church a bit more skeptically, and it may not have the moral authority that perhaps it once did.
What other influences seem to be at work, either major or minor, on Irish voters when it came to the repeal of Amendment 8?
I think that one thing that was interesting is that the campaign didn't seem to have a strong effect. I think close to 3/4 of Irish voters said they'd more or less made up their mind before the campaign, and the campaign did not sway a real whole lot of people. I mean, there were very dedicated pro-life groups out there that were going door-to-door, holding demonstrations, doing educational activities, and I appreciate all the effort that everybody put in, but it seems that only a relatively small percentage of voters said the campaign made a big difference. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
What do you think pro-life activists, pro-life communities in the United States can learn from this kind of watershed moment of polling in Ireland?
It's really kind of hard to gauge some lessons from this, since the Irish situation's unique compared to ours. I think that we need to know that we have some work to do, especially on kind of unique scenarios that, it's not the position I have, but many people do think abortion should be a legal option in cases of rape or cases of severe fetal deformity or cases of health risk. And I think, again, the situations where pregnancies do pose a serious health risk are very, very rare. And, I think that, skilled obstetricians know how to handle those situations well and could take care of both mother and child. I think we just have to work to educate people about these unique scenarios a bit more. I think that another problem they had in Ireland was the fact that politicians were pretty much supporting repeal. Very few elected officials came out against it. I think that might have been a little bit of a problem. And Ireland really does not have the kind of quote-unquote conservative media that we do here in the U.S., that it seemed that the main broadcast media and the Irish Times and the other major papers were all supportive of repeal. Ireland probably doesn't have the equivalent of Fox News or the Wall Street Journal or National Review or some of the outlets we have here in the U.S. And I think that made it a little bit harder for pro-lifers to kind of get the word out and make the case to the people that about our arguments.
Finally, you say that if you could have been involved in this, you would like to have seen some other questions being asked in these exit polls having to do with waiting periods, taxpayer funding of abortion, parental involvement laws. What could we have learned there?
I mean, essentially, it's not really clear exactly what's going to happen to Irish abortion policy. I think certainly they're going to change their laws and allow for abortions in some circumstances, but there could be a whole range of possibilities, some of which could be better than others. I'd like to see, obviously, if the most protective laws possible. We know here in the U.S., even incremental laws do make a big difference. So again, I think it's pretty unlikely that Irish voters would support, say, taxpayer funding of abortion. I think it's pretty unlikely they would support late-term abortion. I think they would probably support parental involvement laws that would require a minor girl to either notify or get permission from her parents before obtaining an abortion. So again, a waiting period probably would pull well. So there's lots of incremental things that can be done, should be done, I hope will be done. It'd be just good if we had more polling data to kind of show to members of parliament that, hey, these incremental things are popular, enjoy broad support, and you know would certainly be worth pursuing, even if abortion does become legal.
Dr. Michael New is visiting associate professor of economics at Ave Maria University, associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, and author of a recent column for National Review Online titled "An Irish Exit Poll Finds Nuanced Views About Legal Abortion." You can read it at our website, issuesztc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. New, thank you very much.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
On the other side of the break, we're going to spend some time with you, our listeners, going through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. That email, talkback@issuesztc.org, talkback@issuesztc.org, and the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
Thanks to generous supporters, tuition for all incoming residential pastoral ministry and deaconess students at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be paid in full. Hi, this is Dr. Lawrence Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary. Learn more about studying for the vocations of pastor or deaconess in the 2018-19 academic year at ctsfw.edu.
Because Christ-centered preaching matters. Because His Word does accomplish that which He purposes. Because hanging out with like-minded Lutherans is important. Hi, I'm Alicia Herman, member of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and I invite you to Redeemer. I particularly appreciate Redeemer as a church where God's grace enables us to see that our justification depends not on our performance, but solely on Christ's performance. If you're looking for a Lutheran oasis, where in a changing culture, the message stays the same, visit us in Fort Wayne or at redeemer-fortwayne.org.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Zion Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. St. Paul's Lutheran, Long Beach, California. All Saints Lutheran, Charlotte, North Carolina. Redeemer Lutheran, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Shepherd of the Lake Lutheran, Garrison, Minnesota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri, and Holy Cross Lutheran, St. Genevieve, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org. click support. The Issues Etc. 300.